Episode 78 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded April 19th, 2016. Killing time until Game of Thrones. So we're discussing all the shows that we're discussing this week.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out a title. Like, what encapsulates all of this? And Randy poignantly pointed out.
Yes.
That, hey, Game of Thrones is next week, so who gives a shit?
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of great shows in here, including some of my favorites, but the fact of the matter is none of you care about it as much as Game of Thrones.
I think it's kind of unique because right now, because usually there was always one or two, right? Like, one and two. Like, yeah, like, because you figure, let's see, overlapping of The Wire, Mad Men, and Breaking Bad, they kind of all overlap. Well, The Wire was near the end, but you still had The Shield. Let's see, when did The Shield go off the air? 2010?
Yeah, something like that.
So, yeah, like, The Shield was kind of going off. I think, didn't, like, Dexter still have some great years there?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had Breaking Bad, and then you had Mad Men. So you always had, like, all these, you know, shows that were kind of like they say in the watch, that were really vying for the belt. But right now, this is like a Mike Tyson or like a Mayweather moment where Game of Thrones just has a belt and nobody's taking it from him.
Yeah, that's pretty much true.
And I mean,
they're pretty untouchable.
Yeah. And I
as much as we have like our own little fan favorites,
it's
not like The Leftovers or the Fargo or the Americans is going to take it.
Because Game of Thrones has taken over the culture.
Yeah,
you know, did you listen, Randy, to the Keeping 1600 this week with Kal Penn in it?
Yeah,
it was really good. And the way they talked about how big of a Game of Thrones fan that Barack Obama is.
Yeah.
And now they were all like, "Man, I wish we were still."
He looks at the country governing like that. Wouldn't it be great? He's like Dinklage's character.
Right? Yeah,
he just kind of sees everything, drinks his wine. Barry just has sex with Michelle, whatever. And I'm not saying he's going to be
Greg,
like,
"Whoa, Greg, where's this going?"
Went to a weird place.
Yeah, but I'm just saying he's a thinker. He's
just
playing
saying
chess
he's having
the
sex
time.
With her. All right, hey, this week we're talking about a couple new shows that just debuted this last week, as well as some that just had their season finale, and we're going to hit on Billions, which we regrettably lost last week. There's this big clusterfuck of an issue I had with the audio, and I was actually grateful I was able to recover what I did.
Yeah.
But we're going to be talking about Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Catastrophe, Last Panthers, and then we're also going to be talking about finale-wise, Billions, Better Call Saul, Supergirl, and Vinyl. A lot to discuss this week. But before we get to all of that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Greg.
And we have a little bit of news to discuss.
Yeah.
First up, as of when this gets released on Friday, Randy will have been in attendance Moon Tower Comedy Festival.
That's right. Yep.
As press.
I'm doing Moon Tower again this year. We did it last year. It was a great time. And I am very much looking forward to doing it again. Mm-hmm. Last year, they had a lot of headliners I wanted to see, like John Mulaney, Patton Oswalt. This year, I'm hoping to get into the David Cross show.
Right.
But mostly, the fun that I had last year was going to the various venues and going and seeing these shows that had, like, 8 or 10 comedians, and they'd each do like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw, you know, there were guys from the Daily Show, like Hasan Minhaj was there, and a few other people, and a couple other people I knew from like At Midnight. But mostly it was like comedians I never heard of. And then I found a few more comedians to follow off of Twitter off of that. There was a lot of comedians I'm hoping to see again this year, like Brian Garr and Mike McRae, Chris Cubis, all sort of either local or local-ish guys. And then there's some people from Edmonton, like Randy Lidke is going to be there. But mostly I'm looking at these shows that are like I said, they're like 8 or 10 people. You go, you may know one or two of the comedians, but the odds are since Moon Tower has them here, that they're legit comedians. Like there's a lot of good comedy. So I'm looking forward to just sort of seeing big shows and exploring some new comedy. I'm hoping to do some interviews, but it just kind of depends. A lot of the people, Jessica Williams is going to be here.
She's are you going to take your little recorder with you?
I am. Yeah. I am. Right. She's not on the press list.
Mm-hmm.
David Cross is not on the press list. The people that all the people that you would probably know the names of are not on the press contacts list to have.
What? So you don't have anyone like representing them that you were able to reach out to?
Nope. Unfortunately not.
Ah.
So any interviews I have will be more off the cuff at the moment kind of thing.
Right.
Well, what about nighttime parties? Are there any like comedian parties?
You know, there's like a regular after show kind of thing, but it wouldn't surprise me if nobody goes to them.
Well, with a press badge, I mean, I don't know.
We'll see. Like, there's not any specific parties, but we'll see.
Well, speaking of festivals, we also have the ATX Fest coming in around the corner, which we wanted to once again tell you guys, the listeners, that if you are in Austin or if you're thinking about visiting Austin, it could be a great weekend to come and go see a lot of really cool television, I guess, shows and producers, and all the talent coming.
Yes, this year is going to be.
This year is a good year to make the trip.
Yep.
Because, man, the list. Okay, there's a Terriers.
Right.
The Wire.
Yep.
What are some of the others?
Shit, I gotta look it up.
David Simon's gonna be there. David Simon's gonna be there.
Right.
The entire Terriers crew.
West Wing reunion with like Josh Molina, Janelle Maloney, Bradley Whitford, Richard Schiff, Aaron
Two
Sorkin.
Two Broke Girls, I think, is gonna be there, Randy?
You shut up.
Real Rob? But if Kat Dennings was there, you would flip your shit.
I would, actually.
Real Rob's gonna be there too, right? Oh my gosh, it's gonna be awesome.
But I got you an interview.
There's a ton of good shows. There's Ugly Betty. Ugly Betty's having a reunion. There's
Gilmore Girls are doing something there.
They did it last year. I don't think they're doing anything this year.
Oh, wait. Okay. The Shield Writers Room reunion.
Yeah, the Shield Writers Room reunion with Kurt Sutter.
They're going to have the last big Friday Night Lights reunion that they do, and they're going to actually have it on a football field.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to have. I know people may not be into Everybody Loves Raymond, but it should be interesting now since
Doris Roberts just died.
And maybe Ray Romano will be here for that, which would be cool. So
it's a lot of good. I mean, it keeps getting better every year, the programming. This year's programming is spectacular. I mean, for me, all they needed was a Terriers panel, and that's what they got. So,
and the nice thing is that it still feels kind of small and cozy and intimate in a way.
Right.
Like, we went to some panels, and there was just room in there, and it's like, wow, people could sit here.
I think it's probably the sneaky festival before it's getting big that you can't get in anything. You can still go in and talk to some of the stars and some of the writers and really kind of just hang out with them, and also just really get a chance to see some really good shows and get a lot of good good behind the scenes about the way these shows are created, taking it from the writer's room all the way up to, you know, the set design and all that stuff. They got all that kind of thing. And plus, it's not super hot in Austin yet, so it's actually a good time to be here.
Yep.
And this is going to be the second weekend of June, which is good because it's kind of nothing going on. And every other weekend now in Austin, there's always something like this because traffic becomes a pain in the ass, places to stay becomes a pain in the ass. This is actually perfect timing.
Yeah, it's a great time to come to Austin if you've been thinking about it. If you're a TV fan, you can still get badges. I know they've still got some. Yeah. It's one of my favorite things to do every year. I love ATX Fest. I'm super excited.
They got Tyrant, which is funny.
Yeah, Tyrant,
Tyrant, which, you know, is in its third season, remarkably. I love that show. But they have a bunch of shows that you think should have been canceled or were canceled that you might have loved, and they bring people there, and you get to, and I think the people who do those shows really love when there's so many people passionate about it too.
It is a love fest to TV, and all sorts of TV. If you like that crappy stuff, or you like the stuff that we talk about, it's all in there.
That's true.
We also wanted to mention that the Podcast Awards are back up and running, and you can nominate us, the TV Dudes, your favorite TV podcast in the TV and film category. The nominations are open from the 15th to the 30th, and it's a one-time go in there and nominate. The voting doesn't start for another few weeks after that. They have to listen through and vet everyone.
Right.
But you can go nominate us, and we would really appreciate that. Once again, it's in the TV and film category. Go to podcastawards.com. And our URL is thetvdudes.com if you guys are just strictly iTunes listeners.
Not just TV Dudes. We are the TV Dudes.
The TV Dudes. And you can also recommend me on the Beerist podcast the over in the Beerist. Arts category if yes. you want. And in the Games and Hobbies, there's Rage yeah. Select.
Go ahead.
Hey, I could win 3 awards through this thing if you guys really hooked me up.
Hook them up. Hook us all up. Please.
But we appreciate all your support. We also wanted to mention that now our podcast is available on the Android Google Play. They just finally launched podcasts, and
oh, really?
We are on there. Yeah,
it's taking them that long?
I know, it's kind of weird.
That is kind of weird.
They just got it set. I mean, they've had Google Music set up for a while.
I
but
know.
A while back, they're taking submissions for podcasts, and so we're in there. So
good.
Now, if you are good. An Android user and you don't want to use iTunes or Stitcher, we're now also over there. Moving on from that, if you do want to help support the site, you can go to iTunes and not .com, just iTunes, and you can give us a 5-star rating and write a review, and that's a great way to help support us. We really appreciate that. None this week, but we do appreciate you guys going and doing that, and it really just takes a second of your time. So please go and help us out. Another way you can help us is patreon.com/TVDudes. Mm-hmm. That is a site where you guys could donate a dollar to the show. I always think a dollar is great.
Yeah,
it's a great amount. You give us a buck an episode, and that'd be about $3 to $5 a month.
Yep,
and it's like buying us a beer or something.
Yeah,
one
yeah.
beer that all three of us share.
Yeah,
really, we spend hours on these podcasts. So you're basically paying three guys a dollar an hour. That's like slave wages, really.
It is.
So you we're not complaining. We'll happily work for those wages.
But Randy, that's not all.
Yeah.
They're not just paying for the podcast that we're already giving for free.
That's true.
We're giving bonus exclusive
yes.
content to you guys
yes.
who actually do contribute. And that is a delightful political discussion that we have week to week.
Or it could be something, you know, softer, like talking about being family men.
Oh, yeah, we did that last week. We talked about being TV dads.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so please go check that out. That's, once again, patreon.com/TVDudes. That's enough of the news. The personal news.
Yes.
Let's move on to some listener questions.
Yes.
Because we got a good gaggle of them. If you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, you guys can ask us questions and we'll answer them right here.
That would be nice.
Right now.
Yes.
First question's coming to us from Daniel Wallace, who says, "Greeting, dudes. So with the recent deaths, quote unquote, of some main characters on shows such as Arrow and The Blacklist, to name a few, whatever.
Yep. Uh-huh. Wow.
And neither of which has Joss Whedon attached. When do you think a character's death is justified? And what are some good or poor examples you have seen?"
Any death can be justified if it moves the story along. I mean, there's absolutely any number of reasons why you kill a character. But I will go on record as saying that Arrow death, there's 100% chance that is not the death. I'm absolutely certain.
In a world of Lazarus pits.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure it was faked. The way it was set up,
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Anyway.
And I stopped watching Blacklist, so I don't know who died on it. Did Tom finally die? I mean,
because he's in the spinoff.
James Spader's dead.
Seriously?
They saved him. No, I'm kidding.
He's dead, but they moved his consciousness into a robot body.
Oh, my God.
So I don't even know who's dead on that, but I mean, I guess the one on the Americans was pretty terrible and graphic and brutal.
But not surprising.
Of course not surprising. Yeah. This is the way it happened. It was like, ugh.
I think as far as writing a death scene, you want to in some way either care about a character or dislike them so much that you're happy they're gone. So it's one of those two. If you don't want to all of a sudden just have a death scene and it's for a character that has no emotional weight attached one way or the other.
Yeah, actually, I can name one. This is a Supergirl spoiler, but... not this week, but the previous week, that this big mind control thing. Mm-hmm. And Supergirl has her, you know, her best bud, Wynn, and then James Olsen. And apparently this redheaded girl who she's been so close to that we've never seen her since right now. And they all three got up on the ledge and said, "Save me." And Supergirl could only save two of them. You will never guess which two she saved.
Right.
This redhead died. Huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, I'm like, you know, I understand that you don't want to kill a main character. That's cool. But if you want that scene to have any impact at all, maybe introduce the character at least a couple episodes beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was really clumsy and cheesy.
I mean, Walking Dead is always guilty of this.
Yeah.
They'll bring in characters and then just kind of off them. And you're like, who?
Yeah.
Who the fuck was that? I don't know. You're just kind of rolling through a lot of people because it's more about they want the impact of a death, but they don't give They don't give any weight to the character.
Oh, I did see who died in Blacklist. Looked up. Spoilers. Liz.
Who?
What? the main woman.
The main character?
Yeah. Well, okay. Not Jane Spader. But
so she's not woman. Dead.
Yeah, she's not dead. Okay. She's like probably pulling off a
Yeah.
Tom.
Fake deaths. I'm a comic book fan. I'm okay with as many fake deaths as you want to do.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, it's fine. I'm used to it.
Not when it becomes a gimmick.
It's stupid. And I think the more you do it, the less impact it has. But do whatever you want. It's fine. If you want to kill somebody off as a cliffhanger.
And we're missing the obvious one with Game of Thrones. Not Game of Thrones. Jesus. Walking Dead. Actually, and Game of Thrones.
Glenn's
really.
Non-death.
Glenn's non-death.
The psych with Glenn.
Well, the only one that really just made me feel something really was the second season was with What's-Her-Face's daughter when she came out of the barn.
That's oh, really? One. That had no impact on me because I didn't know who that point, was.
Yeah.
I was like, who's that? Oh, that's supposed to be the daughter?
Yeah.
They did too much zombie work on her.
I would say that. And in Game of Thrones, because I hadn't read the books, I have to admit that, I mean, I didn't actually think they were going to go off and kill Ned Stark, but I was like, wow.
They do a great job of earning it.
Or the Red Wedding, which was like, again, not reading the books. Oh,
How about the Sand Snake versus, not the Sand Snake, Viper versus the Mountain?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's not the way that was going, and all of a sudden it was over.
I watched that over and over over again because
it
was just so
sick.
Craig likes people getting their head crushed.
Oh, my gosh. It was
spoiler.
Great. And then, but yeah, the Game of Thrones really, and whoever dies this coming up season is going to be worth it. It's going to be great.
It's
painful.
Always good. They're always good at that.
Yeah.
The one thing I liked about Lost and, you know, Walking Dead would do this, I guess, occasionally, but a little bit too late.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was a character that wasn't liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Nikki and Paolo is a great example of really like, hey, these are hated characters. It didn't work out like we thought. So we're going to really go through with not only killing them, but having them have to lie awake while they get buried.
That was pretty brutal.
I'm like,
but
I'm good.
Lost worst death for me was Libby.
Mm.
Because it was a great moment. It was a great impactful moment. But what it did was robbed us of ever finding out all her backstory. And I really wanted more of her backstory.
That's like a little behind the scenes stuff. Like
yeah, sure.
Libby and Ana Lucia, they had some drunk driving issues.
Yeah, and they got fired for cause. Yeah.
That's why they called the episode Two of the Road.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, because they got drunk driving.
That's the other thing about anything in TV, especially deaths, is sometimes it's because an actor wants to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's because there's problems with the actor.
Or sometimes.
And you got to forgive a little. When they have to write that quickly and for a real circumstance, you got to give them a little leeway.
Well, I mean, you hit all the stuff in the wire, like Prop Joe. For some reason, Prop Joe going in season 5 was like, that just was terrible, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, the other two really were in season 4 of 24. Open up when the president got shot.
Yeah.
What's his face? His wife got blown up.
Yeah.
And it was like bang, bang, and you weren't expecting it.
I
was like, holy shit, what are they going to do? So those are two that were like, wow, that was insane. So.
Yeah.
All right. This question comes from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, hey, dudes, I like Better Call Saul season 1.
Oh, boy.
But I wouldn't rank it among my top 10 new shows of last year.
Mm.
The high praise you all were giving it confounded me.
Mm.
However,
brace yourself, Jonathan. The storm is coming.
Yeah.
He said, however, season 2 hit its stride in the first episode and finished perfectly with a stop button. Boom. Have there been shows they kind of liked in the first season, but were floored by the quality jump in second season? I mean, we always mention like Parks and Rec.
Yeah, Parks and Rec is the big one. I mean, that was actually bad and then became great.
Leftovers, I think, is another great example of a show that, you know, I gave it my number one both years in a row.
Yeah.
But there's a marked difference between that first season and second season. It fixed everything they needed to fix.
A lot of people will say Justified. Took an uptick.
Yes,
I would say you were one of them. You were one of them.
The Bennetts, man.
Mm. I'm trying to think of other shows. I know. I mean, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, True Detective. I feel like season 1, it was like okay, and then season 2, they really got into what I wanted them to do.
Let's just move on to
that's
next
exactly
question.
The same, except it's the opposite.
Speaking of True Detective, Marvin A. Lanier says, I was watching John Oliver last night and noticed an ad that ran before showed True Detective. The complete series. Do you think that HBO has shelved it because they're not confident that a third season can recapture the drama of the first?
No, this is weird me out too, because I saw this ad on HBO Now, and it's like they mention like the complete series of The Wire and the complete series, and what they're trying to do is to get people to sign up for HBO Now.
Right.
So they're trying to pitch it as, hey, look, you can watch every episode, and they mean the complete series as of now.
Yeah.
But it is weird to me that this ad for HBO Now, which is a really well-produced HBO, is running before John Oliver that I'm watching on HBO Now.
Right.
You've already got me. Stop advertising to me.
Yeah, but maybe they're doing a free week right now.
Oh, maybe so. Yeah. Maybe so. That's possible.
Well, Sometimes they do those free ones, and that's when they run.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, you can – I mean, when you sign up, it's like free for a month. You
know? Yeah.
But I think they just – I mean, I think what they're doing is that they might – If I was HBO, I would start pulling out some of those old seasons, like, you know, pull out John from Cincinnati. I don't actually remember.
Nobody should do that.
I mean, I don't remember how bad it was, but why not show it? Maybe there's a cult following.
You know how I know you don't remember how bad it was?
Because
you're suggesting they should promote it.
That's an excellent point.
I watched every episode of that show, but good God, should they not promote it? They should bury that deep with Arliss.
Yeah, I don't.
Arliss.
Arliss was terrible.
But they do post, like, Eastbound and Down was in that ad.
Sopranos,
of course, was in that ad. They go into the back catalog a little bit.
I imagine Nick Pizzolatto is going to come back for season three, and yeah, I imagine that they're going to have other people work with him to make it better.
Yeah,
he's also one of the writers on the new remake of The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. He's got talent. He just needs a little he's to me, he's kind of like a Tarantino light. And now Tarantino sometimes needs an editor. You know
what? Yeah.
That's why his movies go like 4 hours long.
Yep.
Even though he's got some meaty dialogue, but sometimes he loses the essence of a story in the dialogue.
Sure.
Same thing with Nick Pizzolatto, who he's got good ideas, obviously. He's written some really good, even like Vince Vaughn, like when he was killing that guy with the glass and stuff. That was a great scene.
Yeah.
He just might need somebody to say, hey, we don't need all these other characters. We don't need Taylor, what's his face?
Swift.
No. Well, you know, the guy from Friday Night Lights. We may not need that character. So.
How about True Detective Season 3, The Return of Russ Cole?
Oh, my God, please. I just want to see more of him, more of his life, just like musings and
I wouldn't mind,
nasty mullet.
He just drinks all day.
Stash.
That's all he does.
I could see Marty, too. Was it Marty?
Marty, yeah, Rust and Marty.
Yeah, I could see Marty coming back.
How about Rust and Marty, and they use some age makeup, so they're like in their 70s, and they're in a retirement home, and they got to come out of retirement to deal with the case.
With Vince Vaughn, who's a zombie.
Yeah, he's actually the Yellow King.
Oh, they got to deal with the case, which they actually didn't solve. So
right.
Half measures.
They finally get, oh, wait, we didn't. You remember that whole case we looked into that we all fell apart?
They got the monster in the haunted house.
Yeah, that was it. That one guy, he had nothing to do with it. We should really go after the guys, the conspiracy that we found out about.
We did it. We got the mentally handicapped guy. He was in charge of the entire thing.
You know, I just would be so funny. I could just see like if they're in a senior home or something, it's like one of those single take shots. Shots of them just kind of like playing backgammon or something.
And eating shawarma.
It's on the pill card. It's like just in
right.
the pill card.
And then they go from room to room. Then they're going to play bingo. And then they're going. And then they go in and they get it. And they're getting like a spiel from Saul about them getting ripped off.
And then they cut to Russ and he's got a bunch of empty Jello containers around him.
Oh my God, that'd be funny. You're saying times a flat circle over and over again.
Yeah, we know, Russ. You've been saying that for years.
Yeah.
Nobody's here.
Zach McLernan says, so news has come out that from the showrunner of Game of Thrones that they're going to possibly do shorter seasons for 6 and 7, or for 6 with 7 episodes each to finish the show starting next season.
Yeah.
So this has been bemoaned and criticized by HBO and George R. R. Martin. George R. R. Martin just wants the show to go on forever, like his books, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So he doesn't have to finish him.
Yeah. Who's in the right and wrong, and what direction would you guys have them go?
So wait a minute, is this confirmed that it's gonna be 7 episodes?
I think they were just talking about they wanted to shorten the last season.
Season 6, right? We're coming up on season 6.
Right. I mean 7 and 8.
7 and 8.
Yeah,
it's gotta
seven
be.
And eight.
You know, the thing is, Benioff and Weiss, let them do whatever the fuck they want. Yeah. They know what they're doing. Let them do whatever they want to do. Season 7 as one long 10-hour episode that airs on one night. Fucking let them do it.
Yeah. If they can't stretch it out and make it work on those other episodes, they shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Right.
And they've earned the trust to just kind of write it as succinctly as they want.
But what if those episodes are like an hour and a half or hour and 15 minutes?
Yeah, whatever.
59 minutes or whatever.
Let them do whatever the fuck they want. If they come to you and say they're going to do a whole episode in the whorehouse where people are just fucking for an hour, let them do it because they know what they're doing.
Now.
And Randy needs this.
I need this.
Now, so this is season 6, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of any show that has not, like, had the backlash of, they've gone, I mean.
You mean the jump the shark thing?
Yeah, because, I mean, you figure, okay, Game of Thrones has some backlash with certain scenes or certain things like that, but, like, overall, it's not enough to take down the show or not enough for people.
This last season was a little slower. There are some people who can complain.
Some people do, but it still has a lot of its fans. I mean, it's definitely still got. The majority of the talk about Game of Thrones is how great it is.
Yeah, because if you think about all the shows, I've seen Breaking Bad 6 went 7, Wire went 5, Justified went 6 or
something. The question is,
was the singing and dancing dragon a misstep? Was it a misstep?
This is the season that could happen because it's not based on, or it's based on Martin's books, but it's not based on any of the books people have read.
Right.
And so if anyone gets a whiff of this is not as good as I'd hoped it would be, they can start blaming. They can start saying, they needed the books. Without the books, it's not the same. And that'll be the siren's call. That'll be what they'll say is that.
They could have said that last season when they totally wrote past the book.
Right. Sure,
And got rid of all the garbage in the books.
I have faith in the show, I guess.
I have absolute faith in them, yes.
I just think they're going to nail it. And this, could this go down? Could this show go down as the greatest ever, you think?
Maybe.
Like really up? I mean.
No, because it's not going to beat out The Wire. It's not going to beat out Breaking Bad. It's a little too pulpy for that.
But I think it's going to be, it still will have its maybe greatest quote unquote genre show, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that it will definitely be known as, think. Yeah.
So it's almost a Mount Rushmore.
See, the thing is, a lot of people put The Walking Dead up there. Well, a lot of people will say Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, we'll put them on the same level.
Well, those are like, that's like the difference between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump.
Oh.
I mean, it is. No, I prefer Bernie Sanders. Donald Trump people are knuckleheads. You know? I mean, Walking Dead is garbage. Walking Dead.
You mean Walking Dead that you've watched how many seasons of?
I've watched every season of it, but it's because you think it's going to get better.
And he's watched every season of Celebrity Apprentice. So. Right.
No, it's like, I think Walking Dead will go down as like one of the most overrated shows ever. When people actually go back and watch it, it's like, this is stupid.
For all that Walking Dead has its problems, I think Walking Dead does what its audience wants it to do.
Kill a bunch of zombies.
Yeah, pretty much.
But and just have really bad plots and just really have characters do things totally out of what you.
I'm just saying, Walking Dead is more popular than Game of Thrones.
That's true.
It is beloved as far as ratings go.
It is.
It's got more viewers.
Have better ratings.
It has more viewers. It's got more viewers than almost any show on TV.
Mm. Walking Dead's been a top like scripted series for years now.
Yeah, and that's why I think Game of Thrones. Ultimately, might wind up as like the critic's choice in the same way that The Wire and The Shield sort of divided.
Yeah, right,
The Shield is the one everybody knows about.
But The Shield,
The Wire is the one that those critics will hold up.
But The Shield and The Wire are closer than Walking Dead in a Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm just saying. You talk to your average person on the street, I bet that you say Game of Thrones best genre series. Well, maybe, but The Walking Dead. That's what the answer will be.
Okay. All right. Well, two more questions. We'll wrap it up with those. Dennis McElwain says, has there ever been a character that's grown on you within a season? Cat Grant bugged the hell out of me for a fair chunk of Supergirl season 1. A character that you're like, you know who I actually think?
What?
In Mad Men, I hated Pete.
But you were made
and
to
And I kind of started liking him.
Yeah. Well,
Andy Dwyer on Parks and Rec.
Well, Pete, after...
Yeah, he was just annoying and dumb.
Yeah.
Pete in season 1, when he was going about the television to the black market, like he just couldn't understand... Why would we do this? The market's right here. It's like, Pete, don't you understand? You don't sell things to black people. That's when I'm like, Pete is just really about the business, you know? And he just sees opportunities, even though he tries to stomp over people. But sometimes there's opportunities that he sees that nobody else sees.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of another one.
Yeah. I mean, that happens to me a lot. There's definitely characters on most shows.
Boyd. Boyd started out.
Like, really? You didn't like Boyd? I love Boyd from the outset.
Ah, man. You know,
you never watched The Shield, Greg.
No. Well, I mean, not Walton Goggins, but I'm just saying Boyd was a racist blowing up.
Yeah, but
I like him.
He was an entertaining racist.
And he was like this crazy.
Yeah, he was an entertaining one, like Trump.
Actually,
yeah,
I liked him. It was like,
yeah. Trump would be a great fictional character.
Hey, you know what?
He kind of is.
I'd vote for Boyd for president just because of the way he dresses. I love the way he dresses.
That's the problem, Greg. All right, let's move on to our last question. This is from the Whiskey Wolf, who says, as Netflix expands their slate of Marvel shows, could they combine some, like Cage and Iron Fist, to open up more slots in the schedule?
I don't know if they have slots so much. I think that they do what they feel like doing. I do think a Power Man and Iron Fist is the natural place to go. Instead of doing a Luke Cage season 2 and an Iron Fist season 2, Power Man and Iron Fist season 1 is a better way to go.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they are making money off of all of them, as far as I can tell.
But they're not making that much. They've had some – Amazon pulled that – some we should talk in the news. Amazon pulled that little, okay, we're going to separate Prime and make it cheaper than Netflix to kind of get at Netflix. And then Netflix stock price went down a lot because of some revenue news that came out that weren't that wasn't great.
Because they made Flaked with Will Arnett.
Yeah, that was it. That did it.
No, it was
Rob. It was Real Rob.
Real Rob, asshole.
Real Rob destroyed them. So, as Greg alluded to in the last segment, we're talking about Netflix, and So, Greg, what do you got on this? So Amazon's price thing, that's a big thing.
Well, what Amazon's doing is that they're separating. Jeff Bezos is like a he's like a ninja genius when it comes to some of this stuff. So what he did is that he separated Prime. The Prime delivery
Prime Video and the Prime shipping.
And Prime, and Prime Video service, and then did the Prime Video service for like $8.99, I think? I don't have it right in front of me.
But if you still have Amazon Prime, you still get the video, right?
Yeah. And then that's my worry.
Right.
Because I don't really – I like the video,
right.
But that's not why I got Prime.
But you can separate it now
if you don't want
the video.
But I don't want to separate it.
Right.
I think you're still okay, but
you can do it month to month now, where before you had to buy a whole year.
Yeah, but now they're sort of separating Amazon Prime as a separate video service,
right.
And they priced it a dollar under what Netflix just went up, and the people who are grandfathered are now paying $10 a month.
Right.
The problem is, this caused a stock drop for Netflix. The problem, as I see it, is Amazon has a couple good shows. Netflix has like 30 good shows.
Right.
So I don't think they should be too worried just yet that the Wall Street people who are all evil and corrupt couldn't see it.
Well, I just think that people just hear certain things, or like people just see, okay, my Netflix has gone up $2, right?
Yep.
And they might get mad, or if they're really on a tight budget where they're thinking, okay, I only want to pay like $50 a month for TV. Whatever, however I get it. And they see it goes up $2, and then they see maybe they go up, and then maybe HBO Now goes up, or any of the other streaming services start going up a little bit, then that kind of blows their budget. So I don't know. I think people who do that, or a lot of people, not like us, but like other people who do that, are doing it really for cost savings, and $2 is a lot to them. So
I don't know, man. I don't think anyone's going to look at Netflix and be like, oh, well, Amazon's dollar cheaper,
right?
And even though they've got like half the content, I'm going to switch to Amazon. I don't see it happening.
And a quarter of the quality.
Anyway, because Netflix just announced that they got new showrunners for The Defenders,
right.
And those showrunners are the guys who ran Daredevil season 1.
Right.
Drew Goddard is on board as executive producer.
That's awesome. I love Drew Goddard.
Yep, he did a great job on Daredevil season 1. Defenders is starting filming this year.
So it's Douglas Petrie and Marco Ramirez are going to be the showrunners.
Okay, yeah.
And then Drew Goddard, yeah, like you said, executive producer. And there's this guy, Jeff Loeb. How do you feel about him?
He's involved in everything.
He just threw that out there.
Yeah. It seems to be doing well, regardless of his involvement.
Right. Yes, so, yeah. He's there. Know.
Despite.
He's there, too.
Yeah.
All right. There's also been some news about a Stephen King has been having some buzz around him. Mm-hmm. First of all, 11/22/63, which wrapped. There was – and this is on Screen Crush, and it really seems like basically the writer trying to make an article out of nothing.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Because he's talking about how there's some talk about a sequel to 11/22/63. Mm-hmm. The talk specifically was there was a Facebook Q&A, and Stephen King said, "I'd love to revisit Jake and Sadie and also revisit the rabbit hole that dumps people in the past, but sometimes it's best not to go back for a second helping. If I were to write a sequel, it would be about Jake trying to stop unscrupulous people from using the rabbit hole to change the past in some terrible way." That is not confirmation in any way of a sequel. That is about at least like twice he says, "I'm not doing a sequel."
I just love the idea, though, of them making – it seems absurd. How many times do we have to assassinate this poor man? Right. Or maybe like Titanic 3.
Or maybe better yet, we send him back in 1865, like April 1st, right before Lincoln gets assassinated.
He says to stop Lincoln?
Yeah.
And then
just send him to back, stop all the presidents.
Send him back for McKinley. You know, send him back for all the presidents. You know, everybody. Send him back to
finish the job with Reagan.
He's got to send him back to stop William Henry Harris. And put on a coat.
Right. Yeah. And stop and go back and stop.
That was a really boring season.
he just shows up. Sir? And that could be the pre-credit sequence.
Yeah, he's funny. Sir, you need a coat. I don't need a coat. I'm speaking to my people. No, you need a coat. That'd be hilarious.
Here, it's Gore-Tex.
Yeah. You know, here's a little bit of medicine.
Here's
well.
A future coat.
Wait, what was, you know, we used to do stuff like that all the time. What was that John Lovitz cartoon show? They used to do shit
the
like
The Critic?
That. The Critic. They used to do stuff like that all the time. I miss that about The Critic.
All right. But also, on the news from Stephen King, the Spike TV apparently is interested in the Myst TV series.
Wait, Spike TV still exists?
It still exists.
I was wondering.
So this is my favorite thing. This is from an article on Slash Film. Right. They talked about it's in development for Spike. And my favorite thing about this article is the author says, although most people haven't cut the cord of access to Spike TV, it's the kind of channel you put on the morning after you drank too much and don't want to focus too hard. Like, oh man, that's harsh.
All they had was MMA stuff for a long
time.
Yeah,
Spike TV is not a thing, but they had a show. They had
which one?
It wasn't Ash vs. Evil Dead, but it was something like that.
No,
that
was on Starz.
Yeah, but it was something. They had some kind of horror show, I think.
People don't remember this, but back when VH1 was basically playing all comedy all the time, I think Spike does that with like MMA fighting now.
Yeah.
That's basically all they do.
So basically there's not much to know except that Spike officially ordered a pilot episode.
I think the bigger news is that Spike still exists.
And the bigger news is that Spike still exists. Yeah. Yes. All right. So then we've got this is weird. So you know, occasionally you hear these deals and you're like, what? How did that happen?
Right.
Well, apparently, Kurt Russell, Kate Hudson, and Mel Gibson are making a TV show.
Wait, Mel Gibson still exists?
Yeah.
That's not a joke. I thought that's the beginning of a joke.
Gibson will co-star in, produce, co-write, direct a show based on the Barbary Coast book from Gangs of New York author Herbert Asbury. Mm-hmm. It's going to star Kurt Russell and his stepdaughter, Kate Hudson. Gibson be a recurring role. It's set in the 1849 gold rush. We saw the biggest influx of gold seekers, gamblers, thieves, harlots, politicians, and other felonious parasites the infant city of San Francisco.
Where's Goldie Hawn been?
I don't know.
I miss her.
Yeah, so do I. I've always liked her.
But this is not a this is not have a network or anything. But you know that lineup. It'll probably get a network if they decide to do it.
So they're basically saying Kurt Russell's going to keep the mustache from The Hateful Eight.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Should get its own show.
Kurt said, you know what? I love this mustache. Can I get another role where I can just keep this mustache like my Wyatt Earp mustache?
Can I just be Wyatt Earp for
a minute? I think they should bill him when they're doing the credits. It should be Kurt Russell and Kurt Russell's mustache.
Exactly.
So Mel Gibson comes with a little bit of baggage.
What are you talking about? Really? He won an Oscar. He's an Oscar-winning director and actor.
Yeah.
But
beloved 80s action star Mel Gibson, right?
When he does direct things, he's got a good eye for direction.
Yeah.
He's just kind of a terrible human.
It's just that he's kind of a racist anti-Semite.
Just don't get in the car with
issues
him.
With women.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he's a woman beater.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got like 9 kids, too, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's
a little crazy.
Well, that's the crazy.
By a little, I mean a lot.
But the insane thing about it is, like, so when he was at the Golden Globes, you know, I was looking at him age, I'm like, my God, he looks terrible. And he's like not even 60 years old. I mean, he's like 58 or 59, but he looked like he was 70.
Well, I think when they do the show, they should do Kurt Russell's mustache,
right?
Mel Gibson's racism. They should just go ahead and give him a credit.
Gibson's rotten liver.
Mel Gibson's rotten liver.
he looks bad, but I don't know. Maybe he still got it.
And finally, this is exciting news. Mm-hmm. Oh. Dan Harmon is developing an FX series called Happy City.
Sweet.
It's a comedy. Yes. It's a...
Happy City sounds just like something here.
Oh yeah,
of course.
And no one's gonna be happy there.
Oh, is it an animated series?
Oh, is it? Don't do animated.
It says
he's already doing one.
And try to produce the new animated series for adults about the world of inner city motor vehicles, featuring a taxi, fire truck, and helicopter.
Whoa.
In the thematic and visual style of Thomas the Tank Engine.
Oh, okay.
It's a Los Angeles comedy troupe is doing the voices.
Including a bunch of people we've never heard of.
This is weird.
Yeah.
Dan Harmon, it's basically like a spoof of Thomas the Tank Engine.
Harmon's a very unique thinker.
Yes, he is.
I mean, that is... I'll try it.
I was just thinking about Rick and Morty again.
Yep.
Because I think about him about 10 times a day.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that show, like, the bizarre humor is such a testament to Justin Roiland.
Right.
And the voices, that sort of creativity, but the heart and soul and the mythology and the arc, all of that has Dan Harmon's imprint on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that guy knows how to just world build and make that story structure stuff, and he does such a great job with it that I'm still very interested to see what he does here.
Yeah.
Even though I like him doing live action.
I want some live action. Yeah.
Especially if he gets his foot in the door at FX.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
All right, well, let's take a break and we'll get in a lot of TV talk. We're going to have to do some lightning rounds or something.
Outside the cafe by the cracker factory, you were practicing a magic trick. And my thoughts got rude as you talked and chewed on the last of your pick and mix. Said you're mistaken if you're thinking that I haven't been caught cold before. As you bit into your strawberry lace, then offered no attention in the form of a gobstopper. It's all you had left and it was going to waste. Your pastimes consisted of the strange and twisted and deranged, and I loved that little game you had called crying.
Lots of new shows to discuss. Whoa. Lots of old shows as well.
Shows
that we missed last week.
Yep.
First one we're going to discuss is Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is back for season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Randy, you finished the whole thing.
I watched the whole thing.
You were binging it.
Yep.
Right.
And I've watched the first few episodes, and it's great to have it back.
It's really fun. I will say, as it goes on, I won't say too much about the last half, but it gets a little more serious. It's still hilarious. It's still weird.
It should.
And they bring in some great guest stars, so... Alan Sepinwall declared the second season better. I don't know if I quite feel like that's the case, but
right.
It was really good to have it back. And that damn theme song is so catchy.
Man, Titus.
Yeah.
It's... When I watch these episodes, I look at the lines that they write for him to deliver.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't see a lot of people being able to successfully sell these. And some of these lines, they're not necessarily that funny.
Yeah.
Except for in the mannerism in which he delivers them.
Yeah.
Like, he completely sells something that, if anyone else said that, I'd just be like, oh, what a dumb joke.
Yeah.
And it's such a testament to his personality.
Well, and the secret weapon of the show is Ellie Kemper's smile, her sort of big energy.
Yeah.
This would be way too dark with almost any other actress.
I am loving how much we get to see Lillian, and at least in the beginning, we're seeing a lot of her.
Yeah.
So In the first episode, we see some Robert Durst stuff going on. Does that continue?
Yes, oh. All the way throughout. Played by Fred Armisen, by the
so
way.
So I'm guessing that's part of what goes dark.
Yeah, a little bit. Although, no, that's mostly just a running gag.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
But it's so funny.
So do we see John Hamm return?
Have
to, right?
Yes, but it's in not in ways you'll expect.
Okay.
So not as much Johnny Hamm in the second season as in the first, but what bits he has are pretty great.
Right.
And I just the stuff that surprised me was they kept going with Dong, who was sort of a problematic character for them, but they went in and did a lot more of that. So
I liked him.
I did too, but there were some people who thought it was kind of an Asian stereotype.
Mm. Yeah, and they kind of cleaned up his accent.
Yeah, like, a little bit.
Made him a lot more accessible.
They did the hilarious bit where he learned English from the Kardashians.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That was a great riff.
They're all like, why do I know this?
Yeah.
I found Jane Krakowski's character a lot more tolerable.
She's much better in this season. They've given her a better arc.
Yeah.
And by the end, I mean, Krakowski's always been, she always plays this sort of character. She played her in 30 Rock as well.
Mm-hmm.
But she's much more sympathetic this year.
And having her face off against another villain, they had Amy Sedaris return.
Oh, man.
But they have the girl from Pitch Perfect.
Anna Camp kills it as
so
this socialite
awesome.
Who's, I don't know how far it's gotten at where you're at, Grant, but she's basically this, she's a super smart, like, girl who went to college and all this stuff, and has basically subsumed all of her dreams and independence into being this rich trophy wife.
Yeah.
And she's just going insane because of it.
And she's like, this is probably why I'm lashing out with you.
It's so funny. It's so funny to me, and I love her part.
Oh, there's a scene where Kimmy Schmidt dresses up those two young kids as Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And takes them into the sewer. And then she talks about them like having to fight off a sewer pig.
Yep. Yeah. And they also say when the shells that they got them from the Galapagos, when they visited the Galapagos.
It's so
messed up.
Yeah. Very excited to see the show back.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to go back and rewatch season one if I had all the time in the world.
So another show that still, Randy, you are singing the praises of, and Greg and I still haven't jumped
watched
on board
all
with,
of it.
Is Catastrophe?
I love Catastrophe.
Is it on Hulu?
It's on Amazon.
Amazon. Okay.
It's a BBC co-production.
I saw the first three episodes last year, and I really enjoyed it.
So
I just
last year, I sort of binged all the way through the first season.
Right.
The first season was about
five, six.
It's six episodes. Yeah. Same with season two. And it's half hour. It's like half hour episodes. It's easy binge. But it's about the first season's about a guy from America who meets a girl in Ireland. They have a one night stand. She gets pregnant, and they decide to try and make a go of it. So he moves to Ireland. There's debate whether or not they're going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So the second season picks up, and they're expecting their second baby, and they've been married for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
So they jumped ahead, and it was a big shocker when they did it. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But the relationship stuff and the stuff being married, all their sort of back and forth was a little mm-hmm. darker when they're actually married and have kids.
Of course.
And I didn't like it as much. I thought it was a little scattershot.
Yeah.
And I thought that they didn't really develop anybody's stories all the way through, whether it's them or their supporting cast. And I felt the thing jumped around a little too much. I still liked it,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't as in love with it as I was in season one.
Yeah. There's something about when they do these really close relationship shows, what it's basically kind of like what it's like in real life.
Yeah.
That is just sometimes you got to really hit that mark, or it just gets too close, or you just like get kind of icky watching it. Like, oh man, this is like, am I really like that? Or is my marriage really like that?
And the
that?
Other thing is, there have been so many shows like this, Togetherness, of course, You're
Love.
The Worst, Love, and the one on Hulu, Casual, that I love.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff in this vein that I've found in love since. So it may just be that I didn't need more of some, you know, younger couple. Well, not younger. She's in her 40s and so is he. But I need another sort of newly married couple struggling with kids. I've seen it.
Yeah.
And especially with sort of a darker thing.
So that's a season two thing, too.
Yeah.
Take season two, go darker.
Yeah, it is.
And it's nice. I mean, at least it was nice in the beginning to see Kimmy Schmidt isn't doing that.
Yeah.
But now you're saying it goes a little darker.
It does, but I'd say it's still that same wacky thing. It goes darker, but in the right way.
I wonder why. Do you think it's because people are like, okay, because TV's gotten to this level where people are expecting dark things and realistic things, so instead, you know, we have to start addressing it in our world somehow.
I think to some extent it's a natural thing. I mean, going back to Friends and NBC sitcoms, mm-hmm. they used to up the drama as they moved on in their later years, and then it became less about the funny jokes and more about the character relationships. I think it's a natural thing that they do in any kind of comedy. They try to hook people into the ongoing stories.
But it was done so clumsily back then.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Okay, we have to do the serious show. Like, you know, when Tom Hanks is the alcoholic and on Family Ties, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like that.
Speaking of Friends, there's this line in Kimmy Schmidt where they're like, well, if they're able to make me believe that Aisha Tyler's a white woman in Friends, then I guess I can believe anything.
That was pretty good.
That's a great line.
All right, let's jump over to Supergirl, which just had their season 2 finale.
Yeah. So Supergirl, I really liked Supergirl. I think it started pretty well, but a lot of people found it kind of cheesy.
You like it more than The Flash, right?
No, I don't like it more than The Flash, okay. But it was having a run of episodes where it was actually better than The Flash.
Right.
The ending is, it's got some absolute cheese. Mm-hmm. Just to throw a little spoiler there, Supergirl saves the world by giving a big speech about the power of hope.
Oh, come on.
And I'm totally not kidding. That's really what it's about. But it works for this show. It's a little cheesy, but it works for this show. And then they really got into some cool... There's a couple moments here, kind of like what The Flash does, where it's like, I can't believe I'm watching this on my TV. I can't believe these characters are doing this thing on TV, that the special effects are good, that they're going ahead and committing to the bit, which movies weren't even doing like 15 years ago. Yeah. You know, you couldn't get the X-Men in costumes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of amazing.
Really.
It's kind of amazing where we are. And so I think to see what they did, and there's some real nice emotional resonance, just like The Flash really gets by on Jesse L. Martin's character and having that sort of emotional resonance. Mm-hmm. They've really built up a sort of core family with her and James Olsen and Cat Grant and her sister and all that. And it really just works. And it's a great finale. And they leave off with not a real cliffhanger, but a little cliffhanger that I think may be a super fun nod to fans of Supergirl.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, another show that I guess we're going to toss it right back to Randy again. Yeah. Last Panthers. This is one that you've been talking about. Yeah. Did you check this out?
No, I wanted to. I forgot, actually.
Yeah, this one crossed my radar because of Andy Greibel and Chris Ryan over at The Watch.
Yeah.
And what's this off?
This is on Sundance.
Sundance.
It is, I believe, a French show.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely set in France.
Okay.
And it is about a crew of jewel thieves,
mm-hmm.
international jewel thieves, and
Pink Panthers.
The Pink Panthers, a famous group. And they the opening 10 minutes is like this stage brutal heist.
Right.
This is not a woman dangling from a wire, cutting glass with diamonds and getting the jewels out. No. They go in, pretend to be painters, smash the security guard in the face, put a gun to the head of the manager to get the code. It is a mm-hmm. brutal, quick... sort of heat style heist, and then there's a chase afterwards as they try to make it out.
Mm.
And that opening is what convinced me. I was watching that on the Sundance free app,
right?
And that opening was good enough that I went ahead and bought the season pass.
Okay,
and then from where it goes from there is it's a crew of sort of thieves that have their own issues. It gets involved in the civil war in Serbia and has a history there. There is a cop in France who is basically this sort of uncorruptible cop. He's looking into it. Nobody else seems to give a shit.
Right.
And then there's an insurance investigator who is looking into it as well for her own reasons. And it's really, really interesting. It's it has that feel of like, you know, French Connection or one of those. I'm curious to see where they go with it. It's a different feel than anything else I've watched.
I will catch up on it because this sounds like right up my alley.
I
love crime. I love when crime is connected to some kind of international gun running or civil war, stuff like that, where it goes deeper. Samantha Morton's in it.
Samantha Morton plays the insurance investigator.
And John Hurt's in it as well.
John Hurt is I haven't quite figured his character out yet. Mm. He's another character. And also, for those of you complaining about Game of Thrones and there's so much female nudity, there's a lot of dong in this. A lot of dong.
That's okay.
You have my attention now.
I was kind of surprised. I mean, Sundance I mostly think of as being kind of FX-like.
Yeah.
But this was very much like, they were very much about the nudity and the violence.
French people.
Yeah.
Penises are the boobs of France, if you think about it.
In more ways than one, I think.
I don't know.
I don't know what that means.
Hey, Greg. So yeah. Vinyl over on HBO just wrapped their first season, and you're the only one who had the wherewithal to power through it.
Such a shame. It's such a waste of talent. I mean, all the characters. It's like five different circles going on, because you get like the characters are great. Some of the music scenes are really, really good. The set design is nice. It's like, but none of it connects. And like Olivia,
they have too many parts that are boring.
I mean,
Andy Warhol stuff was just
okay. I understand how they had to go to set the scene for his wife, which they totally underused. It's like
Olivia Wilde.
Olivia Wilde. They totally underused her. Because she wasn't even in the finale at all. I mean, it was like...
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. It's like, what the fuck happened here, you know? And then you had all these weird circles. You had no... I mean, it was kind of a happy resolution a little bit, but it didn't really make sense.
So the arc was that he had this big company, this big record company.
Right.
And he is about to sell it, and instead he decides that he gets reinvigorated with passion, and because his company's super bankrupt, so right. He's just going to instead consolidate, fire a bunch of people, and go small in order to try and restart it.
Well, it wasn't actually he didn't want to try to fire people. He had to,
yeah.
But he's like, we can, you know, basically he got jealous of the other record companies, and he's like, well, we got to find the next big thing, which is basically what record companies do.
Kind of their job.
Yeah, and he gave a couple of really good speeches about what music means to kids and stuff, which actually were pretty cool. But it just – none of it connected. And it was odd because you're mixing – whenever you're mixing like reality with like fake bands, it's very strange. Like, you know, there's a scene with John Lennon near at the Max's Kansas City, and this photographer that his wife ends up having sex with tries to get a picture of John Lennon with May Pang during his Lost Lennon years. I mean, it's like all these things that if you're a rock historian or pop culture historian from that time, you remember, but then they try to like have like fake characters with it, so it doesn't make any sense. And it's always weird watching actors play these really famous people that you have a very, you know, their beats, especially nowadays, you know, when you see like, I mean, everybody knows John Lennon, and I mean, his
like stuff, when we watch the OJ trial thing.
That was a little bit different, though. But I mean, they did it a lot better than the OJ trial, and maybe it's only because OJ was only 20 years ago. Now he's talking about stuff from the early 70s; it's 50 years ago, and so everybody kind of has their. All the John Lennon stories have been out, you know, and there's not that many more that you don't know. Or like you've seen all the pictures of John Lennon from that time, and or Andy Warhol or Bowie. I mean, the most interesting one was the Alice Cooper one, and even that was kind of odd. Or like the Led Zeppelin reference was weird. So you have all that going on, and you have just there's no connection. I mean, it's just a lot of like a lot of basically tricks that Martin Scorsese is known for. And for the shots or for the music constantly going on, for like the dream sequences where there's songs like, you know, to set the scene, there's like an Elvis song and you see like there's like an imaginary Elvis playing, you know? Or like a blues, like because when you realize that Bobby Cannavale's character, he was really influenced by the blues. So whenever he's in trouble or setting the scene, he's always got to like. It's always like some flash to some blues player playing a song. It just doesn't make any fucking sense, and it's a shame because everything should make sense. And like the worst part of the worst parts of the show are like the original music, quote unquote. Like,
I mean, I had a problem with the pacing with this from the very first episode.
Yeah,
and it was just way too drawn out, and it could have been cut in half to make it a little bit more interesting because there were elements of there. There's some great performances. Ray Romano is pretty excellent.
Oh, he was like, great in it,
but. Terrence Winter
was fired from the show.
He was fired from it. And I think this had a lot of the markings of things that he does and that I don't actually like as much. What I didn't like about Boardwalk Empire is too much of that, like trying to put these real elements in there and then just kind of blur it a little and wink at the audience. And
that's what was going on. But he did terribly in this show.
And yeah, obviously he really missed a mark. A little bit of the backstory on this show is that this was supposed to be a movie that Mick Jagger was working on with Scorsese, and then they brought Terrence Winter in, and they're like, "Hey, let's turn this into a TV show."
It would have worked probably a little. Actually, I don't know if it would have worked as a movie, because the other problem with it is that, I mean, who is your audience for this movie? I mean, I'll be 45, and I've been in music culture for a long time. I've been a musician and stuff, and that's like, this is like my wheelhouse, but this stuff was old when I was a kid. I mean, like my...
If they did not sell you on this, there's no way they're selling anyone else. But
they're not getting me back.
Like if they, you know, if they concentrated on stuff like in the 80s, where actually more interesting things are going on because of like the consolidation of record companies, because really with MTV, with like somebody needs to do a show on MTV. Like or something or that.
Oh, on the origins of it. That could be great.
Origins of MTV and how it affected rock culture and pop culture. That would be awesome.
See, HBO is making such a big misstep here.
Well, they thought, okay, we brought in three great names. We thought of Mick Jagger, Scorsese, and Terrence Winter. One of the things is, A, let's see, I think most of them are in their late 60s or 70s. So they're going to go about their golden age. I mean, 73 was a golden age. Let's see, I think Mean Street came out in 73, right?
Or, I don't know.
Or whatever. I mean, that's Scorsese's.
I have no musical knowledge.
Well, no. Mean Street's a Scorsese movie. I mean, that's like Scorsese's kind of like.
I have no Scorsese knowledge.
Well, but I mean, it's like that kind of like the 70s in New York. Like people were there making art. There's a real romanticism about that. And I get it because, you know, I lived in New York and there was always echoes of that when I was there. But when I was there, it was 20 years ago. Now it's like 50 years ago. And I don't know where they're what they're doing. And I don't know. I'll try to watch the season two to see how they tighten it up.
If there is one.
No, there's going to do a season
I know they
two.
Renewed it, but now that they could
renewed
just
the Brink,
it.
Too.
Yeah, they did renew the Brink. Yeah,
and unrenewed it.
Well, because they had other
things. Maybe they should unrenew this.
I don't think
they're in bed with Scorsese.
And they're in bed with Mick Jagger and his son, whose son was terrible. Terrible actor. Nice kid looked, but terrible actor.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Billions again. Because we lost our audio from last week, but we all finished Billions on Showtime, and I think that we can all agree that that was fantastic.
Now,
it was
really good. When they both came out, Billions and Vinyl, you know, my money was behind Vinyl, you know? I was like, based on the pedigree, it's like, well...
Me too, just based on Showtime not being able to deliver usually. They can deliver one good season always, so...
Yeah, but they delivered.
Not always.
Yeah.
Those
last 10 minutes.
Oh, that whole episode was fantastic. The conversation. Because I was like, we get the great conversation, the final confrontation between...
Axelrod and... Giamatti's character.
And Chuck.
Chuck.
But we also get Chuck Rhodes and his wife, Wendy.
Yeah.
They get that conversation earlier on.
Now, do you guys think Wendy manipulated all that?
That's what I was
because somebody gets in her, she gets in her car.
I was mentioning this.
Yeah.
Like when I saw this, she gives a little smile when she manages to weasel out that $5 million, and it's like, but she's really smart.
Yeah, because Grant was mentioning this to me, and I don't think either you nor I, Greg, thought this, but now that he says it, like that she sort of left the laptop out for him to get at it. She basically pushed that confrontation so that she could get away from both of them and get the money.
I mean, I don't know if she necessarily wants to like fully get away from him. Like it seemed. Like, she was so restrained in that argument between her and Chuck.
Yeah.
Like, she was almost just guiding him to out what he did and for the confrontation so that she would have a justification to leave, go use that as leverage on both sides, and tape the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, she was there recording it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, because maybe it's because of the way she... I mean, how is she going to predict the way Chuck was going to act?
She can predict the way
because
Chuck
she's his dominatrix. Yeah. Isn't that her whole thing?
She knows exactly how Chuck's gonna act.
She's a professional psychologist who actually trains these high end stock traders on how they're going to be able to trade and like get back in the game. If she can't manipulate someone, who can?
But then what point did she? Okay, she might have turned to Axelrod when she. I mean, she didn't turn on him about the 9/11 stuff, but she turned him out. She turned on him because of the Donnie situation, because that was pretty fucked up.
Yeah,
it
was pretty fucked up.
And then the Chuck thing, you know, did she?
I think that
turn on
Chuck
him, like,
dropped some truth bombs on her that were fully justified. Like, hey, at the end of the day, you know, you're complicit to some degree because you are working with a criminal, and you have to come to grips with that. And she was kind of like. Well, yeah, in a way, I guess I am.
Yeah.
Well, but at the same time,
I'm still shocked at the end of this that basically Bobby Axelrod is the guy that I line up behind. Because he's an asshole. I mean, he's a bad guy. He's breaking the law, and he profited off 9/11. But ultimately, he's less of a moralizing guy than Chuck, and I find him more charming. And Damian Lewis is playing him. That doesn't hurt. But
yeah.
Props to Damian Lewis, man.
Also, Malin Ackerman, as Damian Lewis's wife, is an absolute shark, and I love her in this.
Mm.
So
all that money they were pulling out of their basement, I was like, holy shit.
That is, well, that house they bought in Long Island, which they didn't go back to, but that house was insane.
Now, you guys love David Constable in this, the chameleon actor.
Yeah.
But he's a chameleon that never changes his look. He's always got the beard, he's always got his hair,
he changes his personality. Yeah, changes
a little grumpy, a little disheveled.
Even when he's
put together in a suit.
He played Gale in Breaking Bad, the nicest guy in the world.
And then he played.
And here he plays the toughest, one of these tough guys.
And he's filthy.
He's filthy.
He just seems so
sweet. He's nasty.
He's the smartest guy in the room, and he's down and dirty. Yeah.
He seems like what you want Bobby Axelrod to be.
Yeah.
Well,
Bobby Axelrod is like actually this more cerebral character who, I mean,
but
I love how they juxtapose, like, he's this guy who would take advantage of 9/11 to turn a quick profit. But he's also this guy that's funneling a fuck ton of money right back into, like, the fire department and the police department.
Yeah.
In a way, he's buying them.
Yeah.
At the same time, he's
Bobby Axelrod is the character that Greg thinks most of these Wall Street people are.
You know what?
He's your counterexample whenever we talk about how evil the banks are.
Well, he is evil, but
he is funneling all his money into the infrastructure that the government isn't taking care of. But really, they're all David Constables.
I don't think they're all David Constables. I think some of them are. Or Bill Stearns.
Hey, say what you will about Dollar Bill and throwing away his entire family because of his boss. He's loyal.
That dude is he's loyal to his boss.
He's a sociopath,
money. That dude's
man.
A sociopath.
The scene where they're getting in that fight.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just like
that
loving in an argument.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It was funny.
Honestly, this show just made me. I already loved Paul Giamatti from everything he's done. I already love Malin Ackerman from Trophy Wife, if nothing else.
Right.
But this show made me completely fall in love with Damian Lewis and Maggie Siff.
And I have to say, okay, when you're talking about the second in command, so if you compare Wags to Brian Connery.
And he's great, too.
Who's like. Well, I love that scene when he meets in a diner and he's walking away. He just shakes his head, and Axelrod goes, "I didn't hear a no." And he just kind of walks off, and how he's just kind of disgusted with both those guys, but really does hate Axelrod, but doesn't want to use the methods that Chuck uses all the time. Yeah. And then the woman, what's her name? Her name
Maggie Siff.
No, Kate Condola Rashad.
Oh,
from she is. Wow.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The bench is pretty deep here.
Yeah.
They've got, in addition to just four amazing lead performances, they've got numerous great supporting cast.
Yeah.
So I don't know where season two goes from here. I'm always nervous about Showtime season two, but I really wanted to get this one right because I really like this first season.
This is a good show. I mean, it's like... If they do a season two as good as, like the season two of The Affair was really, really good. If they do it as good as that, then they might be on to something. They might have learned from the whole Homeland mistake.
Maybe. Homeland, Dexter,
every other show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable the material. Like, we're talking about the kind of dry subject matter of stock traders doing things underhanded. And we don't even fully see a lot of what he does.
Right.
We get little hints of it. Like he'll have these private phone calls and he'll have to go off to the woods to do something.
Yeah.
And he might be like, there was one scene, I think, where we saw that he had some trucks lose a shipment or something.
Yeah.
And that's how he was able to bid on something.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the only times where we saw that other side of it. But it's like really dry and they make it really compelling.
Yeah.
And other shows fail to do this kind of stuff.
It's I haven't seen The Big Short yet, but I heard they do something similar with I don't know. I don't personally think the finances are that complicated, but it can be dry.
I just don't think they're that interesting.
Yeah, it can be dry, and it can be dealing with minutia and stuff. But when you get really good actors with people who write it in a crisp way, and then it's shot beautifully. I mean,
The performances are stellar.
Yeah, it makes you, it's like, you know what, maybe wouldn't it be terrible if I had $1 billion, I could give half of it away or all of it away like Bill Gates, so I won't be a total Wall Street scumbag like Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders isn't jumping on Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, two of the richest guys in the world.
Well, I would like to either have $1 billion or look like Damian Lewis. I'd take either one. I'm not greedy.
Again, I'm all into the wardrobe. That dude dresses like, that was awesome. I want his clothes badly.
Yeah. I want Maggie Siff's clothes badly.
No, you just that's want her weird. Out of her clothes, that's a I think.
Weird. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what you want.
I want her clothes on my floor.
Oh, jeez.
I may delete that. okay, well, let's move on from that show. Fantastic as it is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our favorite show, which just had its season finale, season two.
Real Rob.
Better Call Saul.
Oh, Better Call Saul.
Better right, Call Saul.
Right, that makes more sense.
I knew it, Randy. We'll talk about that next week.
Look, on the fifth watch through, you really see all the echoes of Real Rob.
There's such nuance.
Yeah, there's nuance. Yeah.
So, Better Call Saul, it had its finale. What'd you guys think?
I thought it was great.
Oh, it was really good. It's another harrowing episode for everybody.
And I've seen people say it's better than Breaking Bad. I'm not going to go there yet.
Too early.
But people who don't like the show,
like Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan,
I think it's because they like the pulpiness of Breaking Bad, which got on my nerves because it went over the MacGyver territory for me. But the most interesting parts of Breaking Bad, I thought, were really the character, the psychological stuff of them talking and understanding why they made the decisions that they made. You know?
I agree.
And Breaking Saul is basically all that now. And because the acting is so good, because it's just so, we can all kind of touch those feelings of, we don't take it to the extent that these characters take it, but you still understand, it's like, yeah, you know, I've been shit, you know, you've been shit on, or somebody really gets under your skin and you're like, I finally want to get one over on somebody, and yeah, I'll do it any way I can, and you know, they can backfire on you, but still, then what do you do? And then how do you handle that? And how does the fallout of all that shit happening? What happens? And this show does it beautifully.
I thought they did another great fake out. They open in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy's sitting there.
Well, that was great.
And then they reveal it's a flashback.
Right.
That was great. They're so good at that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that flashback, man, more evidence for my Chuck's an asshole. Fuck that guy.
Chuck's an asshole, but they're both assholes. They both are not good
people.
But
one of them is a bigger asshole.
Chuck?
Chuck is a bigger asshole. And always has been.
No.
Everything we've seen of him, he's always been selfish. He's always been so arrogant.
They spent the first third of this episode just in the hospital.
Yeah.
It's so remarkable to me how much time they will just allow a scene to breathe and just because they're making a point. They're making a really excellent point about the relationship between Jimmy and Chuck here.
Yeah.
When Jimmy takes, I don't know the actual term they said, used.
Temporary guardianship.
Temporary guardianship. Yeah. It takes temporary guardianship. And this is not to lord power over him so much as to keep Chuck from being actually committed to the psych ward.
Yeah.
And Chuck
or from bleeding out from a head wound.
Yeah. But he actually needs to legitimately get checked up. Right. And you actually get that sense, like, Jimmy does give a shit about him. He really cares
but
about
so
him.
But so does Chuck. And he gives a shit about Jimmy. Why didn't he just leave him?
Because Chuck cares about Chuck.
Yeah, because Chuck
just bails him out because it's a power control
Chuck,
thing,
and because it reflects poorly on Chuck to have a brother who's a criminal who's a felon.
But once Jimmy was out of his life, Chuck wasn't. He got somebody to cover him. He wasn't giving a shit about Jimmy.
That's not how Chuck would see it. He would see someone would come up to him and say, "Did I hear you got a brother in lockup in Chicago?" And that would humiliate him.
Ah. Ooh, we actually got a great comment on our site from Mr. Plainview regarding this.
All right.
He said he had to agree with me and Randy.
No, so it's a great comment.
But I thought his insight was really good. He says, Chuck has a massive ego, and the best example of this is in hearing – where they find out about the incorrect address. A normal person would have thought they made a mistake and that some paralegal or intern put in the wrong address on a form that was given to Chuck. That's why he got it wrong. Chuck, however, was so full of himself that he repeatedly told Mesa Verde people that he knew the address of their own business. What sort of colossal ego and self-delusion must a person have to over and over tell someone they don't know where their own business is located? I don't believe for a second that Chuck actually meant that he would take care of Jimmy if he was in a similar position. I also think that the only reason Chuck used to come and help Jimmy and bail him out was... or what have you, is because it was a boost to Chuck's ego to do so. Every time he saw Jimmy so low, it would have been like a drug to someone like Chuck. It would have been a great validation of Chuck's opinion of himself. I'm great and Jimmy isn't. See how powerful, successful, and smart I am. See how sad, low, and needy Jimmy is.
No, I don't believe...
This is exactly how it should be. Behold, as I raise my divine hand and give pardon to my brother, he prospers because I will it.
No.
This is the power I hold.
No.
I absolutely believe that.
I don't believe that at all.
I absolutely... Well, that's what we've been seeing. Chuck has been jealous and angry with Jimmy
Chuck has
since...
been jealous and angry because... Because look, this is classic. If you look at classic, like, family dynamics, okay?
Uh-huh.
Chuck is the older brother. Chuck's the one who did everything the right way. He's seen that Jimmy's been scamming his own fucking father for a long time.
We only have Chuck's point of view on that, and Chuck's point of view has been proven to be not consistent.
No. Except for the
that he gave away one pack of free cigarettes once.
Calling his dad a sap. That's just one that shows you the beginning of how Jimmy started viewing the world. And maybe because I'm kind of
whose fault is that?
Yeah,
his dad did a bad job.
His dad was a sucker. He was not wrong to see the world.
Yeah,
that
but
way.
You know what? There are better ways to help your dad than to just. Start using him and just taking advantage of him as well.
If that's what happened, because I don't believe for a second that's what happened.
You know why I believe that happened?
Chuck told you so.
No.
Because Greg loves Chuck.
No, because I am actually, okay, I'm going back, but we also have a history of what he did all the way through the end of Breaking Bad. He's this bad guy. He's a terrible man.
Yeah, but look.
He is.
Look away from Breaking Bad. Look just in the context of this show.
But you can't.
You absolutely can't.
No, you can't because where
it's
going to go.
Chuck. Don't look at Jimmy. Look at Chuck and look at all of his actions
but
all through this show. He has always been selfish. He's always been arrogant. He has always been looking out for number one. Look at how everybody reacts to Chuck. Kim has known Chuck for longer than she's known Jimmy. Ernesto has known Chuck for longer than he's known Jimmy. Okay. Who do they back when they have no vested interest? They back Jimmy.
Because
Chuck's
not true.
An asshole.
What about
Howard? Not true.
What about Howard? Howard backs Chuck, but Howard's an asshole.
No. No. Kim
assholes back assholes.
Kim has a vested interest.
You're right. Kim has a vested interest at that point.
And then Ernesto... may not be the brightest guy on the fucking planet. You know, he's like when he say, "Oh, it's the mailroom." That's a dude who doesn't have any ambition. That's a dude who looks up to a guy like Jimmy. Well, I mean, I've seen guys like that or people like that who just have no ambition and say.
So
well,
everybody who likes Jimmy and doesn't like Chuck is a low ambition guy. But
okay, so
Bernie supporter random.
So when Ed Begley Jr. brought him in and was really saying, you know what, I'm going to give you a chance, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I respect your go-getter, but there's a certain way to do things. So Ed Begley Jr. was a sucker too?
Oh, no,
he wasn't.
I'm not claiming Jimmy's flawless. I'm just saying when you look at the Jimmy and Chuck relationship, Chuck is clearly the asshole.
Jimmy's an asshole. I think what turns him to Saul...
Guys, can't they both be assholes?
They are both assholes.
There we go.
And I think what turns him into Saul, I think this tape, which
that, by the way, you want to talk about asshole. Chuck is his brother has just spent all this time taking care of him,
and his brother's been bold faced lying to him about what happened.
But his brother, who could easily, if he was as selfish as Chuck, have just let him go, cut him off, risks his own professional judgment to make his brother feel better.
Same thing.
And his brother is using it to get him.
They're
accused
mirrors.
Of felony.
Those guys are like mirrors of each other.
All right. Well, we're getting repetitive on this note.
Right.
So
let's
focus on the fact that he does record.
Yes.
Chuck records Jimmy, and the ramifications of this I think are going to be very interesting because whereas you might think that Chuck is going to come out victorious, I think this is going to be Chuck's complete downfall here.
Well, we know it's going to be because we know what happened.
We don't know if
if Jimmy's going to be run out of town and that's why he changed his name to Saul.
Probably. Right.
But I think it's actually going to be more that Chuck is going to try and go after him, and Chuck's it's just going to be revealed, hey, you have a crazy issue,
yeah,
and you need to be committed to a psych ward, and you've actually had to have your temporary guardianship handed over to Jimmy. You're not a reliable person, and this one thing is just someone trying to calm you when you have a mental condition.
Yeah.
He just lied to say that to make you feel better.
No,
if saying that makes you feel validated about who you are,
yeah, Chuck's credibility is going to be pretty bad.
But you guys are forgetting the small minutiae that this show is great at. Unless something happens to that copier guy, because that copier guy, Jimmy kind of bought him off, but you think maybe he's gone. But one of the things that I did like about Gilligan breaking
Chuck,
back,
Jimmy's not going to be going to jail for a felony.
Something's going to happen that's going to turn him to Saul. But I'm just saying it's not as neatly wrapped up because there are witnesses. That's one of the things that would always get, you know, that would always get Saul in trouble and Walter White, because there's always like that one little thing that they don't think about that comes to bite them in the ass.
I think
that could be a possibility.
I wonder if, like, in a way there might be some sort of credibility lost for Chuck as far as, like, all the cases he had won in the past due to his new mental issue. And what this does is end up tarnishing the entire McGill name. Oddly enough, it's Chuck that ends up ruining that name. And for Jimmy to continue being a lawyer, he has to change his
name. No. I don't think it's that, because I think
– I know.
I think it's the Walter White thing. Like, everybody's for Walter White until one thing, just like, okay, you went too far. And he starts losing those people. He starts losing Kim. He might even lose his Ernesto, where Ernesto's like...
But we have to have Saul for a bit, right?
Oh, I know, but I mean, it's kind of like... Because, like, okay, remember, okay, what
I feel like we can't destroy the lovability of the character that early.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how long...
Beyond the speculation, though, I do want to mention one thing about Chuck.
Sure. Yeah.
The way they shot the him being brought into the hospital...
That's great.
And going to the CT down. Scan and all that stuff.
So disoriented.
They really gave you a sense of how he was feeling tortured.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job of... And I am not remotely sympathetic to Chuck at this point, but even I felt bad for the guy at that point.
Michael McKean's performance.
He's fantastic.
Michael McKean is...
He's so good at playing a total asshole.
He's just good in general. But we need to get to Mike, too.
We do need to talk about Mike.
So Mike, yeah. Mike's just great to see Jim Beaver.
Yeah.
It was a great scene. And do you guys think that Nacho was doing that on purpose? Did he know Mike was there?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Because now I thought Nacho was the one who left the horn.
That's got to be Gus.
I think you're right, Grant. I think it's Gus.
It's Gus.
Because Gus is smarter than Mike. I'm not sure Nacho is.
Gus has been watching the situation. He figured out who did it, and now he's leaving a note. And that's our first tidbit we're going to see.
And that he's recruiting Mike.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I guess it's just I don't quite understand where he would come in, like where Gus from afar, or what clued him into Mike.
Well,
not
Gus,
yet. Let's remember,
Gus works for this cartel.
Yeah.
So Gus could have been just like Nacho, looking for his way out with his boss, who he hates, who killed his friend, possibly lover.
Yeah.
He could have been watching, and suddenly Mike comes in the scene.
He doesn't want to fix the problem with a bullet.
Yeah.
He wants to dismantle, what's his name?
But,
yeah. Which we know eventually he will.
What's his cousin?
The crazy one.
The crazy one. Now, I do wonder how...
So he goes to jail for a couple of years, and then he's back right in time.
Well, he won't show back up until Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but I didn't think...
No, he's doing jail time.
Not that he... He didn't testify.
No, he didn't testify in the gun charge.
Right, he's going to do...
He's still going to do several years. He's going to be put away until Breaking Bad.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, they put him away until Breaking Bad, but they didn't put him away for like 15 years.
Right,
at which point he would not have been around.
Hmm.
So exciting that we're going to get to see... Gus.
Yeah, I mean, still think you're jumping to a conclusion that I don't think it's, I thought it was Nacho.
Not because the creators confirmed that they put a Gus Easter egg in there.
Yeah.
Did they?
And what else would it be?
Okay, that's weird. That's interesting. Okay.
But I'm trying to look back why him just writing a note that says don't on there.
Because he doesn't want him. He wants to go a different route.
Yeah, but I mean.
Why didn't he write Dear Mike, don't do it. Sincerely, Gus.
Oh no, why
I'll
wasn't like
season three?
But why wasn't like on a Hermano's chicken like legal paper or something?
Or something?
You know
what I mean? Yeah, it's a more obvious.
Because he wouldn't leave it.
That's actually true. Yeah, yeah.
He wouldn't leave a trail. Yeah. If right. he's going to contact Mike, he's going to do it himself.
Right. That'll yeah. be, that'll be cool. And yeah. then I don't know. It's just I don't under. I'm not quite sure where that's going to and how that's going to and how. Salamanca ends up having a stroke because it's essentially what happens. Or
medicine's going to be tampered with.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Yeah.
I honestly, I almost thought that Mike was going to take a shot at him and that was going to cause the stroke. I thought there was any kind of possibilities.
Right.
Yeah.
I also thought he might shoot Nacho.
Me too.
I mean, I thought it was any. The nice thing about the great thing about Better Call Saul that they've been doing is they know that they're a prequel. Yeah. They know that they're doing stories that we know where a few points are where these characters are.
Right.
But there's so much wiggle room in there, and they're really playing around with that. We don't know where they. How they get to these points.
Yeah.
Yeah. They love fucking with us.
Yes. Yeah. And I love this show. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to race to the end. Cause I just want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But then as soon as we get to the end, I'm like, oh man, I got a year before I see any more of this.
Yeah. And that it's rough too, because it's like everybody wants to get to the Breaking Bad point really quickly. And I think that's why, like we were saying before, why people are down on the show a little bit,
yeah.
because it's not moving as fast as they are as they want to. But then you realize how fast it actually moves when you go back.
Oh,
and think
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about where Jimmy was at the beginning, you know, he was kind of in this. He had the job, the dream job, had his Mercedes, and now where he's back to, and he's basically really laying that groundwork. And this whole case is going to happen over this tape recording, which is also, I mean, it should be illegal anyway because it was done without consent. So as a lawyer, they should know that. So I don't know. It's going to be, that whole thing is going to be interesting. And then even the fact that the way Kim goaded Jimmy to do it anyway, it's interesting. And I don't know. That's the one of the disappointments I had too was one of the disappointments, I should say, is that I wish there was a little more Kim. You know.
Kim had a lot during the season, though. She got Racy Horn got a lot of screen time. So.
Yeah, but still, I mean, any indication of how there's a fallout with her, we have none of that yet.
No, she's still wanting to forgive Jimmy for just about everything.
Yeah, but you know, I was like, oh, maybe it was just the fact that she had to get donuts and coffee for those old people.
That's not going to help anything, no.
So one more thing. We got to see the commercial that he poured so much time into.
Oh, yeah, the commercial.
What did you guys think of that?
That was
perfect timing, by the way. It was like in the middle of this other thing.
Yeah.
And I saw the TV, and did you notice it before it came on?
No.
Because yes. I saw there was Diagnosis Murder.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit, they're going to show us the cartoon. They're going to show us the commercial.
Ah, that's pretty great.
And that was fantastic.
It was so corny.
The early lead of where he's going to be going with his Saul commercials. Yeah.
Oh, fudge. Mm. Man.
Fudge.
So that's it. Man, I was like, I was all, we're not going to have that show to discuss anymore.
No, but
no, we'll have another show to discuss.
This small thing about, I don't know, Thrones or something? I don't know what it is.
Holy shit, we get Game of Thrones!
Yeah.
So thank you guys for tuning into this episode. I know it was all just a waste because, once again, we're all waiting for Game of Thrones. But that'll be forthcoming. So stay tuned next week, guys. And until then...
TV Dudes out.
TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.